You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Oh, sing a new song to the Lord. Sing to the Lord. Sing all the earth. I don't remember when I began to sing, and I don't remember my first awareness of God. But one thing I'm pretty sure about, these two have been linked together for me almost from the beginning of my life. Music has power to lift our souls and put us in touch with God. The song in our hearts is a sign of God's presence. The spiritual said it, "Over my head I hear music in the air. Over my head I hear music in the air. There must be a God somewhere." That's the power of music. But the question arises, what are we to sing? What is the Lord's song? Our scriptures this morning suggest that it may not be an old familiar tune that God invites us to sing. God is creatively at work in the world, continuously inviting us to engage in new life, in new possibilities. The psalmist challenges us to be open to singing a new song, to seeing our lives through a wider, more inclusive lens, and to hear and feel the world around us at a deeper level.
Our words of wisdom are from Psalm 96, verses 1 through 4, and adaptation of Mary's Magnificat from the Gospel of Luke.
From the Psalms, O sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Sing to the Lord, bless his name. Tell of his salvation from day to day.
Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous works among all the peoples. For great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised. He is to be revered above all gods.
And from John Philip Newell's adaptation of Mary's Magnificat. My soul sings of you, O God.
My spirit delights in your presence.
You have cherished my womanhood.
You have honored earth's body.
All will know the sacredness of birth.
All will know the gift of life.
Your grace is to those who are open,
your mercy to the humble in heart.
The dreams of the proud crumble,
the plans of the powerful fail.
You feed the hungry with goodness,
you deny the rich their greed.
The hopes of the poor are precious,
the birth pangs of creation are heard.
You have been faithful to the human family.
You are the seed of new beginnings.
My soul sing of you, O God.
My spirit delights in your presence.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Mary heard something in the depths of her heart, and she simply couldn't keep from singing it. A song that signified a new direction, new priorities for how she lived her life. My soul sings of you, O God. My spirit delights in your presence. I describe my own spiritual journey to be like a music crescendo. It started narrow and has been gradually broadening ever since. By crescendo, I don't mean what it means to a musician, that I've gradually gotten louder and louder over the years. No, I see the crescendo symbol turned on its side, and I imagine it as outstretched arms reaching out in an increasingly more open and more inclusive embrace. As I encountered my world as a young adult, questioning, new learning, life-affecting experiences continued to stretch those arms and shape who I was becoming. Often I needed to let go of earlier perceptions, for example, the fundamentalism of my childhood, in order to embrace what then made more sense. I needed to let go of singing many of the familiar songs from earlier years in order to sing the new song that I found unfolding in my heart. It was not always an easy journey. The hold of fundamentalism is strong. There is a fear that letting go may jeopardize your relationship with God. It may also mean that you find yourself out of sync with your family and friends. This was certainly true for me. As I mentioned, I grew up in a conservative, fundamentalist Christian home, and I'm grateful for the sense of God's presence that I experienced there, my introduction to the Bible and to Jesus. However, even as a teenager, I began to have many questions. Questions about issues of science and my faith, like evolution, and about Jesus as the only way to salvation. What about my friends who were not Christian? Were they all wrong? And would they all go to hell when they died? But I loved to sing the hymns and the songs that I learned in church. Like I loved to tell the story and how great thou art. One chorus I learned at summer camp summarized my early faith, challenged me to live as I thought God desired, and encouraged me to share Jesus with others. Let's be true to Jesus, though 1,000 voices from the world may call. 'Twas he who died to save us and demands our life, our loyalty, our all. Since we'll walk and talk with him when our life on earth is o'er, let us labor now to point the sinner to the open door. Let's be true to Jesus, and we'll reap eternal blessing by and by. A group of us met weekly during college for Bible study and mutual support. We took turns leading our discussions. We became good friends. It was liberating to be in a safe space where we openly discussed our doubts and our questions. We sang the hymn, "Great is Thy Faithfulness," almost every time we gathered. It was our theme song. Pardon for sin and a peace that endureth, thine own dear presence to cheer and to guide. Strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow, blessings all mine with 10,000 beside. Great is thy faithfulness, great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me. My faith perspective broadened during those college years. I became less fundamentalistic, more evangelical. I went off to seminary, not thinking I would become a minister, but wanting to continue my exploration of unanswered, haunting questions. I tell people that Fuller Seminary, a progressive evangelical school, was a liberalizing influence on my life. And it was. In the first fall, I took a class in Old Testament theology. I learned more about the Jewish roots of Christianity. It challenged me to see continuity rather than division between the Old and New Testaments. For Christmas that year, I went to a kosher Jewish store in Beverly Hills and bought presents for my parents. My mom always enjoyed the Shabbat tray I gave her, displaying it prominently in her dining room hutch. I began to sing the Psalms in a new responsorial way, canting the verses, inviting the congregation to join in a rehearsed response after each one. Seminary gave me tools for understanding the origin and development of Christianity. I was able to study the Bible using Greek and, to a little extent, Hebrew. I learned about the great theologians, and when I graduated, I resonated with a contemporary expression of the theology of the Reformers, known as Neo-Orthodoxy. I became a Presbyterian, appreciating that denomination's thoughtful approach to faith and social issues. Seminary was certainly a broadening experience. And I relished the hymns that flowed from the Reformation, like Martin Luther's A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. The hymns of Isaac Watts, like Joy to the World, The Lord Is Come, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, and O God, Our Help in Ages Past, Our Hope for Years to Come. And there were certainly the wonderful contributions of John and Charles Wesley, like Jesus Christ is Risen Today, Alleluia, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and Love Divine, All Loves Excelling. I thought I had arrived theologically, but God still nudged. Social justice was not a topic preached or talked about in the church I grew up in. And one day, Robert McAfee Brown, a Presbyterian seminary professor, gave a lecture at Whitworth College, which was right next to the church I served in Spokane, Washington. I went to hear him. In his talk, he said, God takes sides, and God has a preference for the poor. It stunned me. How could God prefer anyone? Doesn't God love everybody? And why the poor? His address challenged me to begin to look for references in the Bible that spoke of God's special concern for the poor. And there they were. Is not this what I require? To loose the fetters of injustice, sharing your food with the hungry, taking the homeless poor into your home, clothing the naked? The Spirit is upon me, Jesus said, because he's anointed me to preach good news to the poor, release to the captives, sight to the blind, and to set at liberty those who are oppressed. And then he challenged his followers, inasmuch as you do this to the least of these, you do it to me. A few years later, I read Brown's book, Theology in a New Key. He, too, had a music background. The book focused on the themes of liberation theology, a bottom-up social view that focuses primary consideration on the plight of the poor and the oppressed. Jesus' own life is an example of this focus and the degree to which such a commitment is willing to go. I know that David has been talking to you about this approach during this series on different Christian theologies. This was the beginning of my concern for social justice. It was a new challenge for me to look at life through the eyes of the marginalized. A trip to Mexico and Nicaragua in the mid-80s, visiting impoverished communities, talking with those who had almost nothing in material goods, yet were rich in love, was a deeply life-affecting experience. The trip contributed significantly to my new awakening. It was a huge stretching point that challenged and subsequently altered my world and life view. I began to recognize God's concern for the well-being of people here and now, for a kingdom of peace and love and justice today on earth, as Jesus invited us to pray. Salvation wasn't just about what happens to us in the future when we die. It was about working for the common good here and now. And I began to sing some new songs that I had never sung before. When the poor ones who have nothing share with strangers, when the thirsty water give unto us all, when the crippled in their weakness strengthen others, then we know that God still goes that road with us. Then we know that God still goes that road with us. Lord, you have come to the lakeshore, looking neither for wealthy nor wise ones. You only asked that I follow humbly. In the late 70s, Presbyterians initiated a consideration of affirming gay and lesbian persons. I explored the issue and concluded that homosexuality was not a choice. I became an advocate for change in the denomination, like David has been among you Methodists. It was a significant crescendo moment, a step many others found difficult to take. I found myself singing a new song. Let us build a house where love can dwell and all can safely live, built of hopes and dreams and visions, rock of faith and vault of grace. Here the love of Christ shall end divisions. All are welcome, all are welcome, all are welcome in this place. The corporate decision did not happen for Presbyterians until 2014, 5 years after I retired. And for you and for David, it only happened a year ago. Little did I anticipate early on that in 2011, our own daughter would come out to us and to our family as a transgender person. And I would find myself on an entirely new, even more widening, inclusive journey. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord, sing all the earth. In 2003, while at University Presbyterian Church in Tempe, I was invited to hear and sing a new song that has been resonating with me ever since. We focused for a month on the relationship between religion and science. Our theme was an unavoidable challenge, the church in an age of science and technology. Throughout history, there have been many ways that the church and science communities have been antagonistic to each other. I learned that month that those who sought to integrate science and religion did so through the lens of process theology. It was a perspective that primarily arose after the discoveries of evolution and quantum physics. I was intrigued by this approach and began vigorously to explore it. Surely, I thought, truth is truth. Whether found in science or religion, we need both for a comprehensive world and life perspective. It challenged some views I had grown up with, even some of those I learned in seminary, and some that were expressed in Presbyterian creedal statements. It was clearly for me a new song. God in this view is understood as present, hidden in the reality of each and every moment of life and of every entity in the universe. We live in an interconnected and interrelational world. In this world, God does not have absolute control. God is not omnipotent, manipulating Earth's events in order to fulfill the divine will. Rather, God is in relationship with creation, not as a coercive force, but as a calling, luring, persuasive influence, inviting each of us into a co-creative partnership to work for the common good of all. Jesus is affirmed as one of us, growing in wisdom and stature, as we all do. And like us, Jesus felt the call to love and compassion to the extent of setting aside his own ego, his own desires, in order to give himself totally to this call, ultimately at great risk to his own life. As I heard and responded to this new song, as he heard and responded to this new song, he said, each of us has the same potential to hear and respond to it in our own time and context. We too can become one with God's call. The new song I began to hear in process theology was less about beliefs and creeds and doctrines, more about relationships, about connecting with the rest of creation, about seeing myself as a part of a great whole. And then risking on behalf of peace and justice and working for the common good and for an earth that provides for the needs of all its people. You call from tomorrow. You break ancient schemes. From the bondage of sorrow, the captives dream dreams. Our women see visions. Our men clear their eyes. With bold new decisions, your people arise. Spirit, spirit of gentleness, blow through the wilderness, calling and free. Spirit, spirit of restlessness, stir me from placidness. Wind, wind on the sea. Almost 54 years ago, on December 20th, 1970, on a cold, snowy evening in Spokane, Washington, I was ordained into ministry at Whitworth Community Presbyterian Church. The church didn't have the funds needed for me to invite an out-of-town guest to preach the sermon that evening, so I decided to go with Dr. Clarence Simpson, professor of English at Whitworth College, which was right next to the church. And at that time, he was also serving as interim president of the school. What he said that night, especially to me beginning a new ministry, could also have been spoken in retrospect on a Sunday in April 2009, when I retired 39 years later. In the late 1960s and early 70s, there was a lot of turmoil in our country. Race riots and war protests. Whitworth College experienced student unrest and sit-ins in the administration building. Knowing my background in music, Dr. Simpson chose to speak that evening about the difficult songs of the night and the challenge to listen for the new song of the morning. Here's some of what he said. If you and I in this church would have a church that pulls together all the diversity of our society, we shall have to hear how to sing our songs in the night. And what is even more difficult, I suppose, is to hear the songs that the others are singing, where the external, the misguided, the confusing differences conceal the longing of the heart. There must be that openness to the songs in the night. There must be that freeing of our inhibitions so that we can sing the songs that reveal our joy and our longing. And with that, there must be also the kind of divine humility that will make us recognize that none of the songs in the night, not even ours, are the full harmony of the truth. We long most deeply for the new song. And when the new song comes, the differences will pass away, and those cherished things that seem to bind Presbyterians together today may very well go. The thing I'm tempted to give my soul for at this moment may well be something that doesn't even show in the new song. And that makes me eager to hear all the songs in the night, not just my song, but all the songs in the night. We shall never sing the new song if our hearts are not open to all the songs of the night. Some say the church is irrelevant today, that we might just as well get out of it and get around to the real business of life. But I say to you, the church has the power to pull all of the singing together, and the church has a real hope under a producing God for the time when we shall sing the new song together. What could be more relevant? What could be truer? And what could be more diabolical in the long run than a supposed church that heard only its own song in the night and supposed that is the new song to be given? There's a wonderful moment in Zorba the Greek. Young boss who's been somewhat tied up by his rational inhibitions and by his English programming, finally discovers that in this erring and exuberant Greek, there is the missing dimension of his life. And so he turns to Zorba in the moment of excitement and epiphany for him. And he says, "Zorba, teach me to dance. I want to turn to Al Gephardt, you see, and say, Al, help us to sing. You are ordained into the whole range of the ministry. Music, as formally defined, is not your total life. But something that music means is something that we need desperately. And I want to say, teach us to sing songs in the night. Help us to be poised and ready to hear even the slightest intonation of the new song." Well, my spiritual journey has been a gradual hearing of that new song that God has been calling me to sing. I didn't hear it all at once. It has come in bits and pieces and during my own process of continual becoming. And I'm still listening for it. And so I say to us here this morning, let us listen together first for the songs of the night that are being sung all around us. Many are scared and frightened. Many are deeply wounded by what is happening. Many are worried. Let us seek to feel tenderly with those who are singing these nighttime melodies, and not be afraid of them or dismiss them. And then, as a discerning community, let us listen for the slightest intonation of the new song, faintly resonating in the depths of our own hearts, and not be afraid of its challenge, even if it means letting go of some earlier beloved melodies. With courage and conviction, let us sing this new song, not only here in the sanctuary, but out there in the public arena. Our world desperately needs to hear this song. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTloveFirst.org.